Programming with youth during the pandemic required us to get creative, to think outside of the box, and to find solutions to how we could continue to connect with young people through distance learning options. Now that we're returning to a more normal programming environment, whatever that is, how do we capture what we have learned from that creativity and continue to use that in our work? Well, this is the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development podcast series. I'm Carrie Rabideau, an extension educator. Today, we're going to hear about a program that was created first as an in-person event. 2020 came and the program had to pivot, was forced to think outside the box, so to say, in order to provide the programming inside a box because of the pandemic. As we return to in-person programming, we're going to hear how Joe and Samantha are continuing this programming in new ways. I have Samantha Lahman and Joe Rand, both extension educators who we have heard from before on this podcast. Thank you for coming back and being a part of this conversation about hands-on learning inside the box.
Thanks for having us back, Carrie.
Thanks for having us back, Carrie.
Now, even though what you're sharing with us today is about a livestock project, so we'll just throw that out there, that's your topic area, don't you think the concept of this programming inside of a box can translate to a vast array of topics and activities?
Absolutely. I think the way it's structured and the intentionality behind what you're going to be boxing can be used for really any program, any project area that's out there.
Even though it's about livestock, we were really intentional about incorporating other types of learning, including things like STEM and really tactile things to make things engaging.
Okay, so really, no matter what topic areas you are working with youth, this concept of programming inside of a box is going to be helpful for everyone to listen to. So Samantha, let's bring us into the context of your project. What started as an in-person event turned into a box? Tell us the story.
Sure. So kind of as a quick recap, it really started with a joke about goats. Within our University of Minnesota 4-HYD system, we work with a number of partners. And one of those partners is our Minnesota Livestock Breeders Association. And so they were meeting with our animal science director, and somebody kind of cracked a joke that 4-H needed to offer a program called Kids and Kids or Kids for Kids, which would be an in-person goat experience to bring new audiences or those that had not had experience with live goats before kind of into a program and start learning about it. So we jumped right on that, started planning, and the first camp was scheduled for spring of 2020. And so I believe the camp was supposed to happen around the second week of March. We all know what happened the first week of March. And so the camp was immediately canceled. We had to pull back. And one thing we knew as camp organizers that we did not want these youth to just miss out on the experience. They were being sent home from school. Other things were being canceled. What could we still do? And so we got together and decided, you know what? We can make a 3-day goat camp in a box. We can get this put together, organized, written, and mailed out so that these youth can still have it on the same weekend they would have been at camp. And that's kind of how it all started. It started with 15 campers and a title of Goat in a Box, Goat Camp in a Box. And then from there, it exploded into a much larger project.
I mean, so really, this started like all programming starts with an identified need and a lot of time put into curriculum development. And in a very short turnaround, you were creative and discovered a way to continue to deliver the program, but you're literally delivering a box that has all of the program materials to the young people themselves. What did you learn from that new programming experience?
We learned a ton in a very short period of time. So our original intent was keep these kids busy for 3 days, give them a portion of what they could have learned coming to an in-person camp. And so we sent out an evaluation afterwards, one to parents and one to youth, with just some very targeted questions of, did you complete the things that were in the box? Did you enjoy them? Which one was your favorite? Kind of things like that, just to gather kind of an interest level. And there were a couple of key metrics that really pointed our direction into, wow, we can scale this at a larger level if we change things and how we structure this program. So the first metric that came through that was really kind of shocking was that the vast majority, about 93% of the participants, said that they completed the activities or lessons with a sibling or a friend that was similar in age. So while youth were all stuck at home together, siblings were going to be doing school from home, it wasn't just the original participant that was participating. They brought in siblings or friends and they did it together as a
group. That's really interesting because that one child was going to come to camp. And what you discovered is it became a family event.
Right, exactly. And so then the second measurement that kind of went alongside was that youth only completed the lessons and the activities where all of the supplies were included. So we sent out in this box six sets of lessons and activities. So the lesson incorporated just some learning values, some videos that they could watch, things that we included within it, and then an activity to do with each of the lessons, something hands-on that they could do by themselves or with minimal help from adult supervision. But what we saw when we sent that out is one of the lessons that we sent had very easy things to find in any home. So it was something like find some form of cereal in your house, utilize a bowl to put the cereal in as they were making a feed ration. Only one of the participants completed that lesson. And it was back from the parents of, we still plan on doing it, we'll get to it. But because it wasn't readily there, portioned out in individual increments, exactly what youth needed, that was the lesson that was skipped.
Interesting. How many boxes did you send out the first time?
15.
After you did the evaluation, you talked about what you learned to improve. What scale did it move into next?
After those boxes went out, I would say within about a week or two, my inbox got flooded with, can we get one of those boxes? Our neighbors got this box. A youth in my county got these boxes. I would like to have these boxes. How do we get these out? The demand kind of exploded and we had requests for, well, could we do a different species? Could you send me something about chickens? So as a regional educator with animal science, we decided we wanted to start building a team that could better scale this to a higher level that everyone in our state could really enjoy and youth could participate in. And so then at that point, that's when Joe jumped on board, as well as we also included three local educators from different counties within the state that had different points of view or perspectives on strength in dairy, a strength in poultry, a strength in curriculum as well to help us build out kind of our next step.
So from there, we sort of had to determine what boxes or what species we wanted to do. We went through this sort of process to make a big program plan, essentially. So what species we would do, how many boxes we would do, how are we logistically going to do all this stuff? And this was at the point in the pandemic where like subscription box kits had become fairly popular, or at least we were seeing that. And so that's sort of the direction we took. So at the end of that whole process, planning process, we determined that we would do four boxes: rabbit, poultry, dairy, and goat, because they seemed like the lowest hanging fruit at that point. We had the resources, we had the supplies, and we had the folks on the team that would be able to create those experiences to put in the box. And we determined that we would create 100 boxes for each species and see what happened. We also allowed our local staff to jump in on bulk ordering if they wanted to create some boxes themselves to share with youth in their counties. So given the evaluation that Sam shared before, one of the things we realized is that the lessons and the supplies really needed to be accessible to youth learning on their own, self-directed. So that meant we had to translate lessons that are typically written for staff who are facilitating or teachers who are facilitating into a more conversational way or conversational tone so that it kept kids' attention, but also was easy to read and was exciting and engaging. And so it sort of mimicked a classroom. And so an example of that in the rabbit box was rabbits are almost everywhere. Rabbits live on every continent except Antarctica and come in almost every size, color, and shape. So we really were trying to be engaging with young people so that the content made sense, but it was also fun at the same time.
not like reading a textbook, not like writing a journal article. It was written like someone was teaching them or that you were at camp.
Yeah, we had to write in the way that we would teach when we're in programming so that young people, especially within directions on how to do things step by step, to the point that we gave directions around how to cut things, how to plant a plant, and how much dirt to use. It had to be really specific about those things. And also because the supplies they were given were just enough for the activity that they were doing.
Which really makes sense because there's no one there to ask a question to.
Right. So that another reason you need to be really specific, but also try to have it be fun and exciting for them at the same time.
And we also knew that we needed to develop these activities and lessons that'll be engaged in for self-motivation. What was going to grab their attention and keep their attention through a 6-lesson box? We've all seen similar boxes or something that's smaller of, you know, like craft kits that go out and it may have them complete just one smaller project area. We really wanted to develop this as kind of a scaffolded experience. So lesson one gives them an introduction, which takes them into lesson two, which takes them into lesson three with a really broad view of the species that they're learning about. You know, we kind of went to the board and went, how do we keep this engaging? How do we get this done? And it, of course, started with another joke of somebody saying, you know what, we should really send them like manure and they can learn about fertilization. And boom, we went, okay, but I think we could actually do something with that. And I think Joe is one, he had known the lesson or had used it before. So we wrote a lesson around using rabbit poop and making bunny brew to make kind of fertilized water to water a plant and watering that plant so that they could provide a treat to their rabbit if they were to own one. We also included activities that required you to put things like stickers on a map, use a tablet, a cell phone to scan QR codes that took them directly to videos that we had other 4-H'ers record specifically for this box series so that they could hear directly from someone that was a little closer in age or that was also a 4-H'er that was working in this species. So games and worksheets, actual decks of cards. They made things like goat soap. So as many hands-on things as we could kind of fit in for each activity, but spaced out so that they had a variety within each of the boxes.
So we also learned, like you heard through that evaluation, that multiple youth would be using the boxes, even if they were only intended to be used by one or had enough supplies for one young person. And so we were also intentional about that. And so with the games and other things that were included, the interactive stuff, they came with instructions for solitary use, but also adaptations for using them in a group or with a sibling or with friends.
And knowing that some of the youth may be together with siblings or grandma and grandpa or mom or dad in that house, we also knew that some of our youth were going to be kind of isolated during this time. They're an only child, or if you don't have a sibling close in age, that you may not be having a lot of interaction. And so we knew that we wanted to intentionally incorporate some peer-to-peer learning, even though we were going to do this in a very asynchronous environment. Each box was going to arrive at the beginning of the month. And then throughout that month, they were going to be able to do things at their own pace and when they had time and when they were interested before the next box arriving at the beginning of the next month. And so how do we get that peer-to-peer connection while having everybody be asynchronous? And part of that was, as I mentioned, with those QR codes. So we reached out to some 4-H'ers in those species specifically and asked, hey, can you record a short video for us? Tell us about some goat anatomy. Can you tell us how you take care of your milking goats at home? And they just simply uploaded those into YouTube and we were able to directly link them to the lessons. So as you're learning about goat anatomy, you're labeling your model goat that you had gotten and you're reading through all these things, you've taken a little quiz, then you can hear directly from Alan on everything they do at home with their herd of milking goats.
We also learned from some colleagues who were doing a similar project, project kits, boxes that they were sending home, that a place to actually connect, even though it would be virtual, would be really in a really important part of the learning experience for the kids that wanted to engage in that way. So each box While it was delivered at the beginning of the month, at the end of the month, we held a half an hour to 45 minute Zoom session where youth could hop on and talk about what they had done with the box if they had, or they could learn about how to use the box if they hadn't yet. We also used that time to connect to folks who were in those spaces with those animals. With the goat box, we went to Sam's farm and we met goats. Kids got to see the goats and learn about what the goats ate. And that was really fun for them. With the rabbit box, we connected with one of our 4-H'ers, Caleb. And so we got to meet his rabbits. And so we were really intentional about both showing them in real life where animals live and what they, you know, what they do, but also trying to make that connection to some mentors. So that might spark future learning or more interest in the future.
The boxes that you put together then were meant to be learn on your own experiences, or perhaps learn with those who are in your house or close neighbors. But you added that component of live interaction with a community. How was that received?
You know, we had mixed participation. Initially, I think participation was pretty high with the first Zoom call that we had, but that dwindled, I think, as the novelty of Zoom and meeting that way, because they were doing it all the time. As that wore off, those calls were fewer, but I still think it was an important thing for us to do for those young people who needed to ask questions, but also wanted to share with their peers, because for some kids, they were isolated and they needed an outlet, and they learn better when they're able to process that with their peers or with us as instructors. The other reason we held those calls is because we knew that sending an evaluation home or emailing it out was not going to be an effective way to measure how kids enjoyed this or what they've learned. We sort of played a little trick in that when they hopped on a Zoom call, we did a Kahoot and actually asked them questions from the lessons so we could see what they had learned. You know, so it was content that was in the lessons. But it was also a chance, we asked very specific questions each Zoom call and had them put it in the chat or say it out loud. What did you learn? What was tough? What was the most fun? So that we were getting some of that evaluation data back directly from young people in order to improve the boxes if we were going to do them again, but also just to make sure that we were providing something that was useful, exciting, and educational for young people.
You do bring up an interesting challenge with doing this kind of programming. Sending boxes out to young people, how do you ever know if they're effective, if they're changing behaviors, if they're meeting the learning objectives that you're hoping that they meet? So that utilizing a game, essentially, that you used Kahoot in a Zoom call is pretty brilliant, actually, because they're playing a game, but you're collecting evaluation data.
Yeah, and I think the other thing was that if they hadn't opened the box yet, that Zoom call, they were able to hear other young people who had, and that got them excited and more motivated to then dive into it after the call was over.
All right. So as I'm listening to this, I mean, clearly you guys were in animal science topics. You utilize the livestock project through 4-H for these learning experiences within a box. There's so much that we can learn that could be used in other topic areas, in other ways. You shared that the curriculums need to be conversational style and have really clear instructions, detailed instructions, that they're engaging topics that keep attention and there's motivation to finish. So that's requiring some creativity on our part as adults to make sure that they're topics that the kids are going to want to keep diving into, that you create these for one learner, but you provide instructions with adaptations for multiple participation in case a sibling or a neighbor wants to be a part of it, and then incorporating that peer-to-peer learning experiences both through asynchronous video and a Zoom call that would be live with others. As I'm listening to this, I'm beginning to think of how I could be creative in different project areas and provide an in-the-box learning experience for the youth that I work with. What are the costs involved?
Cost is always a motivating factor, right? Weirdly enough, with this project that scaled, those first 15 boxes were provided by a partnership in funding, and that cost about $14-$15 per box. And we had some donations and things that you can incorporate in the box for a really low cost. When we decided to scale up, when we were going to 100 boxes of each species, we're talking 400 individual boxes, as well as Joe mentioned, the ability for counties to bulk order to utilize them in kind of more of a group setting, that cost kind of goes out the window of how are we going to do this and make sure that this is sustainable. And so the simple answer is our account said zero at the beginning of this project. Once we decided that 100 was going to be our base, we worked from there and went, okay, how much do you think families are willing to spend on an experience like this? And so that was one of the questions we asked in the original evaluation, because those boxes were provided at no cost. We asked families, how much would you assign a value to for this box? And most of them assigned it anywhere between $30 and $50. And so we went, okay, if that's what they're thinking the value is, I think we're okay being in that ballpark. So we dropped a little lower and did $25 per box. And that included shipping, which it varied slightly depending on the species and the weight of what was in the box. It was around $9. So we're talking around $16 worth of true material that was going into the boxes. So it was 25 per box, or of course 100 for all four. And so we made sure once we had put in shipping costs, as well as the cost of box and material, we also tried to build in about $4 of kind of a revenue for each of the boxes. And that $4 was able to then provide us the income that we needed to order the supplies for the next set of boxes and for the next set of boxes. And that way we had a little bit of cushion fallback. If we didn't sell all the boxes, we were still going to be okay and have everything covered.
What a great way to assess value, asking the families themselves, how much would you pay for this experience? Now, as I mentioned, this gets me thinking about other topic areas, other projects that I might use this concept with. In what other ways have you seen this concept used in terms of putting programming in a box and sending it out to young people's homes?
I think since the pandemic, you've seen a real rise in that type of offering from all kinds of places, not just 4-H. But also within 4-H, that's become a sort of new way to engage young people so that they don't have to show up at a day camp because there might be a transportation barrier. So this is something that is also or could be more accessible for some families. We've also, both Sam and I, have used the boxes in person. So even though they were designed to go out, be mailed, etc., I took some of the leftover boxes and provided them to a partner in St. Cloud who did one lesson in person and then sent the box home with the kids, and the kids were able to complete other lessons on their own. So sort of giving them a taste and modeling, but then letting them do that self-directed learning on their own. And that seemed to work pretty well. It was another way to use the box.
And I think when we think about like what Joe just said with, you know, that we were seeing this kind of explosion of subscription series and boxes and things like that, we can think into our own lives and think of, you know, like all the home chef meals that are delivered with everything pre-portioned for you that you can utilize, and you're much more likely to use them in that way. And I don't think we should be as surprised that they're as popular as they are. This may be a new way for us to work, but it really isn't a new way for us to think. You know, things like Netflix are extremely popular because we have an easy out. We start watching something, we don't like it, you simply turn it off, or you skip ahead to the next episode, or you change it. Boxes like this and programs that are structured like this provide our youth the same easy out. So like Joe mentioned, a day camp, and let's say we're going to send our child for the first time to a 4-day day camp. And at the end of day two, they hate it. They don't want to go back, but there's kind of a self-shame in not going back, of bailing on this, of not participating anymore. Whereas if you're at home with just friends or family, siblings, saying, you know what, I thought I was really, really gonna love poultry, but birds just freak me out and I'm done with this box, and setting it aside. And you know what, we're waiting, boom, here comes the bunny box. This is so much more my speed. And there's a safety in being able to say, nope, this isn't for me, without feeling any added pressure or any uncomfortability.
Now, this project started with 15 boxes, and you have described how it has expanded to 400 and perhaps plus boxes at this point. I'm guessing the two of you weren't the only ones involved in creating these learning experiences. Tell me a little bit about the team that helped make this successful.
You are very right. There was a team behind this every step of the way. And so, you know, the original inspiration for this program coming from our Minnesota Livestock Breeders Association and our animal science director, Sharon Davis, both saying, hey, go out and go for it. And when we couldn't be in person, go, yeah, we'll let you take this risk. Let's see what you can put in a box. Let's see how this measures up. And then when we were able to go to this big scale program and sending out these boxes across the state and to other states as the requests came in, having that help for the logistical things with our regional support staff. And then as we developed curriculum, I think we said we wanted to have at least 5 lessons and activities per box. We were never below 6 in any of the boxes because we would get carried away with the next idea or concept or really wanted to build on something. And so having our local educators who are in the most frequent contact with our young people, knowing what age they would be at, things that they may already know, things that would be brand new information to them, was really helpful. And so we had Monique Stelzer, Amy Nelson, and Crystal Victoria that all played a huge role in writing the curriculum, getting it get packaged in a way that was really attractive to youth, and then helping publicize this program. And a shout out to our postman that cringed every time we showed up at the first of the month with about 120 boxes to be mailed out.
I can imagine the first 15 didn't make that person blink, but after that it might. Well, thank you, Joe and Samantha, for joining me on this podcast to share how thinking outside of the box helped you create successful and impactful learning experiences inside a box.
Thanks for giving us the chance to share, Carrie. Hopefully this is helpful to other folks who are thinking about new and accessible ways to provide education to young people.
And if you have any other questions about how something was designed or developed, or would like to take a look at what we put together or have a sounding board, I know Joe and I would be happy to connect and visit about your program idea.
Thank you. Now, as we wrap up this podcast, I'd like to invite everyone to visit our website for more resources at www.extension.umn.edu/youth. where you will find information about upcoming training on many topics related to youth development. And you can participate in in-person, online, and web-based platforms. You can also go there to learn more about our Minnesota 4-H program if you aren't involved already. Thank you again, Samantha and Joe, for being a part of this podcast. This is Carrie Rabideau from the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development. Please tune in again soon.